May it please the court. Sometime today, the letter carrier will arrive at my home and leave a stack of mail. We could divide that mail according to two criteria. One is whether I solicited that mail. Did I order it? Did I ask for it? Did I say it could come to my home? And some of it would be unsolicited. We could also divide it according to whether it comes from in-state or out-of-state. If it came from out-of-state, then that means that there would be normally or presumptively a use tax owing on that article of tangible personal property that arrived. If I solicited that item and it came from out-of-state, then I would be responsible for the use tax. But the question in this case is something that I didn't solicit and it still came from out-of-state. Who pays the use tax? Now, those kinds of things, when I look at my mail, most of them are going to be envelopes soliciting credit card, or getting me to sign up for a credit card. But there also could be various kinds of catalogs. There could be tests or samples. There could be business gifts. Unfortunately, I didn't qualify for my sister-in-law's company gift of the large, expensive box of See's chocolates at Christmas. But that was sent out unsolicited to her clients. And the question would be, who pays the use tax on that item?
Well, isn't the question what the statute says and whether Missouri can charge a use tax? Not whether Missouri could, but whether Missouri
But whether we do. Isn't whether we do. And here we have catalogs, which are tangible personal property. And the statute says that that when tangible personal property is used within the state, that we charge a use tax. Now, if we just use the colloquial version of use, I think most people would say, well, of course Office Depot uses it.
Well, doesn't it say the taxpayer engages in the storage, use, or consumption? So not does somebody use it, but did the taxpayer?
Did the taxpayer use it? Because we have to figure out who the taxpayer is. Somebody used it, or we wouldn't have this question at all.
Right.
And so the person who used it would be the taxpayer. And so the question becomes who used it, and we can't use the colloquial version of use. That would mean certainly Office Depot, because they're using this catalog to solicit sales. But the statutory definition of use says the exercise of any right or power over tangible personal property incident to the ownership or control of that property. Now, Office Depot owned the paper when it bought the paper. It owned the catalogs when they were printed. That's clear from the contract that's in the legal file. And the question only becomes, did at some point before this thing, at some point before it finally came to rest in Missouri, did this ownership, this control transfer to someone else? And to who that would be? Now, the question to whom, I guess, isn't here. It's just a question of whether it transferred. Now, these items finally came to rest at the location specified by Office Depot. That is, Office Depot had its property delivered to its customers in the state of Missouri, and it finally came to rest at the location because of the right and power over that particular tangible personal property that was asserted by Office Depot. Under our statute, that means that Office Depot owes the use tax on that particular item. Unless they get a credit because they paid sales tax somewhere else, and there's no suggestion in the record here that they ever did that. And that is the way that the statute works. And that's the question here. It's not May Department Stores. It's not Southwestern Bell. Both of those are precedents the court has to tackle, but ultimately you have to come down to the statute. And the difference between the two cases is a curious one. The one that Office Depot emphasizes is that there was a kind of a break in the transit. So to take my sister-in-law's box of See's chocolates example, they think it would be different if she sent the box straight from Minnesota to my house through the Postal Service, so the Postal Service had it the whole time, or if she sent it via UPS, and UPS brought it to Missouri, had it in the, it brought it to Jefferson City, and then turned it over to the post office to deliver to my house. Because that's the only difference between May and Southwestern Bell in terms of the process of delivery.
Well, legally, the difference that they say legally it is that did they exercise control over it in Missouri, and if they hired a third-party contractor in the state of Missouri, then they're controlling the contractor, they're hiring the contractor, but if they put it in the mail outside Missouri, then they have taken no action and had no control over where it went once it entered the state.
Well, I don't understand that distinction. Okay. Because I just don't understand it. In both instances, it is a third party who is actually doing the work. Whether it's one third party or two, it's a third party that is doing the work. So I guess their theory is that if one of the third parties is in Missouri at the time that they get the item, then that means that the use tax is going to be owed by the person who had it delivered to them. I don't know why that would be, because it still is in transit. It hasn't finally come to rest, and that's the statutory standard. Did it finally come to rest? It hasn't come to rest in that instance.
The difference would be, I would presume, and can you address that, that you would exercise a right or power over it if once it's in Missouri you direct where it goes, whereas if your direction of where it would go occurs outside Missouri, then you haven't exercised right or power over it in Missouri.
Okay,
you obviously
so,
don't feel that's the case. Can you tell me why?
So then what I think that means is that if I tell the person in Illinois, deliver it to person X in Missouri who is going to deliver it to the Laytons, then I have to pay use tax. And if I tell the person in Illinois, if I tell the person in Illinois, deliver it to X, and then I tell in Missouri, and I tell the person X, okay, it goes to the Laytons, then I have to pay use tax. But if I tell the person in Illinois, deliver it to X and tell X to deliver it to the Laytons, I don't have to pay use tax.
Well,
that's the distinction.
Then there would be an agency issue there.
Well, I don't know if it's an agency issue, because I don't know if the Postal Service becomes the agent. Because some of these things, in some of the cases like this, the person in Missouri, someone is bringing it to the state of Missouri, and then they are putting it in the mail in Missouri. It still is in transit, but they're putting it in the mail. Is the post office then their agent? I don't think the federal government would ever agree that the post office is their agent. It is simply a means of transportation. And in our statute, the question isn't who the means of transportation it is. The question is, has it finally come to rest in Missouri? That's this control thing. It's always under the control of Office Depot. They controlled it from the moment they bought the paper all the way through the manufacturing process, all the way through the mailing, whether it takes two steps or five steps to get to my home. They control it, because they own it and they control it.
Mr. Layton, the definition of use, exercise of right or power over tangible property, does that have to occur while the property is in Missouri, regardless of whether it's at rest yet?
I think that it has to be the taxpayer has to be controlling where it is going. I don't think the instruction has to be in Missouri. That is, I don't think it matters whether this instruction was given on his cell phone on the east side or the west side of State Line Road in Kansas City. I think all that matters is during this process that leads to the time that it finally rests in Missouri, who controls it? And in this instance, it was controlled by Office Depot. The work was done by the United States Postal Service, but the United States Postal Service was merely operating under the instructions of Office Depot. The Postal Service has no personal choice about where to deliver this. They can only deliver it in the way that Office Depot instructed them to deliver it.
Is there evidence in the record that Office Depot instructed the out-of-state printer to use the Postal Service for delivery?
I don't believe that the contract itself says that it has to be through the Postal Service. I believe in the stipulation, but I'm not sure that
it
says they were done through the Postal Service.
Okay, excuse me. Does it make a difference then if the out-of-state printer chooses who's making the distribution, whether they're using private carrier A, public United States Postal Service?
I don't know the answer to that. In this instance, I don't believe that that's the facts. But I don't know that that would make a difference, so long as the ultimate addressee was still under the control of the owner of the paper.
But clearly, then Office Depot wouldn't be exercising control over the manner of distribution. That's left
to not the manner of distribution, but it was still controlling the place at which the item would finally rest in Missouri, and that's the language in our statute. Our statute doesn't worry about how it gets here. Our use tax doesn't care how it gets here, however many steps, however many times it's moved from a ship to a boat, or from a ship to a train, to a truck, to a car. It doesn't matter. All that matters is when it finally rests, And here, Office Depot had complete control over that particular choice.
I mean, you don't have control over anything once you put it in the mail. Third-party carrier might be different.
Yes.
You've decided who the addressee is. You cannot take it back.
Right.
Once you put it in the mailbox. So I'm really not understanding the use of control there. You told the post office, assuming you told the post office who to mail it to, then it's in the control of the post office.
Well, I don't know that it is, because the post office is bound only to deliver it under your instruction.
Right.
You've given them some discretion in how they get it there, but you haven't told them, oh, and you can, by the way, instead of sending it to the Leightons, you can send it to the Stitts. That'll be okay with us. I mean, they still have
Once
no control.
Once you've directed them outside Missouri, you have no ability to control the Postal Service, as opposed probably to a third-party carrier, where perhaps you could. I mean,
well,
it's
I don't.
Legal to try to stop something once it's in the mail.
Okay, so that would suggest that that if I have if UPS lets me pull a package back, that would be a different case than this case. I suppose that is conceivable that you could draw that line. It's certainly not a line that has been drawn anywhere else, but it's conceivable, and this record doesn't suggest that you could actually reach that point.
Are you saying that we should overrule May? Or
yes.
Right.
Yes. Now, I don't think you have to overrule May to rule for the director, but yes. I don't think May I don't think you can reach the result in May given the language of the statute. And the court there doesn't deal with the language of the statute.
Now, the Yellow Pages case came second.
Yes.
And then and Pearsley didn't mention May.
That is interesting. And I haven't looked back at the briefs to see if the parties mentioned May, but it didn't mention May. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. The matter that's between us, between the department and Office Depot in the case of this refund, really comes down to the plain and simple language of the statute, which, as we've heard extensively discussed, involves control and use. But what the director does not talk about is in the state. And that really is the critical language. If you look at the facts in this case, and the facts, I think, make it a relatively simple analysis under the statute, no action that Office Depot took at any time occurred inside the boundaries of the state of Missouri. They did not order anything from inside the state of Missouri. They did not purchase anything inside the state of Missouri. The paper that was purchased outside the state of Missouri and delivered outside the state of Missouri and never came through the state of Missouri. The printing that occurred outside the state of Missouri. And the depositing into the United States Mail Service occurred outside the state of Missouri. And Judge Stith, I think you're exactly correct. Once mail is placed in the stream of the United States Postal Service, there is no recalling it. You have ceded your entire control over that document. If you mail a letter, or in this case, if you mail a catalog, once the Postal Service takes possession of it, they cannot give it back to you. It goes to its destination. It goes to its destination, well, we assume it goes to its destination, assuming that the mail works properly. It goes to its destination by the route the Postal Service chooses, in the time frame the Postal Service chooses, via the carrier the Postal Service chooses. In the end, you as the mailer, for lack of a better term, have no control at all over
Mr. Layton would argue that because when you put the mailing label on it, you designated who was to receive it, so that label, in effect, continues to control who gets it, and that's the kind of control they're talking about.
And I don't believe that to be the case. When you put the label on the catalog, you tell the post office where you would like the catalog to go. But you can't call it back. If, for example, I mail a letter to my opposing counsel and I drop it in the mailbox and a day later I go, gosh, I can't believe I mailed that letter. I've got to get it back. There's nothing I can do.
And now, email is unfortunately the same.
Excuse me?
Email is unfortunately the same.
It's worse because it happens much more quickly.
Exactly.
I think if we stuck with letters, we would all think a little bit more before we hit the send button, and we might avoid some mistakes. And I think Twitter is even worse than that. But in the end, you can't call it back. Now, I think if you look at May and you look at Southwest Bell, the Yellow Page cases, they're very good examples of what that difference is. Because May is, factually this case. In May, all the actions taken by May were outside the state of Missouri. And ultimately, the catalog came into the state of Missouri and was delivered by the post office. This court found that is not a taxable transaction in Missouri, either from a sales tax or from a use tax perspective, because everything happened outside the state of Missouri. Now, contrary is Southwest Bell Yellow Pages, because in Southwest Bell Yellow Pages, what happened was everything occurred outside the state of Missouri until the third-party agent, and I think that's even the term that's used in the decision in Yellow Pages, the third-party agent of Southwestern Bell took possession and control of the catalogs in the state of Missouri and then delivered them pursuant to the instructions of Southwestern Bell. If we recall how Yellow Pages used to be delivered, I don't even know if we have Yellow Pages anymore with the advent of the Internet, but the way Yellow Pages used to be delivered, you had a third-party contractor. They picked up a package of Yellow Pages. They had a bunch of sub, usually employees, that ran for them, and they would say, okay, take 10 of these to this office building, take two to this house, take one to that house, and off they would go. And all those instructions were pursuant to what Southwestern Bell told them to do. Because they had a third-party agent that they controlled inside the state of Missouri, this court found they exercised use and control inside the state of Missouri. And that was enough for there to be a taxable incident. I'll also point out that in Southwestern Bell Yellow Pages, another taxable incident occurred that Southwestern Bell came into the state of Missouri and sold advertising, which was directly put into those catalogs, which then came back into Missouri and were reassumed under the control of Southwestern Bell. So not only did you have a third-party agent have complete control pursuant directly to the instructions and the day-to-day control of Southwestern Bell at the delivery point, but you also had Southwestern Bell engaging with Missouri businesses, selling advertising, and then returning that product to those businesses. And I think that's a substantive difference also. In the end, there is a break in control, and I think we talked a little bit about that, because the post office serves as that break in control. And I will say there is no evidence in the record, and there is nothing that I can find from my review of the law that indicates that the post office ever serves as an agent of a private business. It is an instrumentality of the federal government. It kind of serves a weird role where it's kind of a private entity for certain purposes under federal law, but it's actually a federal entity for all other purposes. But it is not an agent of a private business. And as a result, private business cannot exercise control over it, and they cannot exercise control of anything that is placed in the hands of the post office, and then they lose control of how it's delivered. Again, like I said, the statute's very simple. It's very clear. There's one other finite point I'd like to touch, and that deals with, we're dealing with the question of tax liability. We're not dealing with an exemption statute. We deal with exemption statutes up here so often that I think it's important to point out the difference. Chapter 136 expressly provides in section 300.1 that tax liability statutes are to be construed against the state of Missouri and in favor of the taxpayer. That's completely different than exemption cases. As this court has held on a number of occasions in a number of cases, Smith Beverage, et cetera, if it is a liability question, everything is to be construed strictly against the state. Contrary, if it's an exemption case, it's to be construed strictly against the taxpayer. What the department is asking in this case is an expansion. It's looking for a very liberal, very broad reading of the term use. It wants to add words, perhaps, such as delivery or distribution, which are not in the statute. It wants to read out terms, actions occurring in the state. But it's asking for a very broad, expansive reading. And the legislature and this court's precedent says that when it deals with tax liability, that is the wrong policy, and it should not be followed. And in the end, it should be strictly construed against the department.
So even though the word distribution is not included in the definition, you still think the Southwestern Bell Yellow Pages decision is correct because they exercise control in Missouri?
They had, through their third-party actor, that they had complete control over that third-party contractor who served as their agent, as the court found. They had control and use in the state of Missouri. That does not occur in this case.
So they had an agent exercising control. Do you have to exercise control, or is right of control sufficient?
Well, I think Certainly, in Southwestern Bell, you had actual control. I think you could argue that they had inherent actual control, is right of control. That's not the fact pattern in this case. There is no right of control at all. Once you give the mail to the post office, you lose control. And at that point, I think this court's precedent may takes over, and the plain language of the statute takes over, and we find that there is no tax liability. I would urge this court to defend the precedent in May, adhere to the rule of stare decisis, and affirm the administrator and commission. I'll cede the rest of my time.
What do you think of the Nebraska and Arizona courts that rule contrary to me?
You know, it's interesting when you look at Nebraska and Arizona, because both of those states have some really interesting language they used. And first of all, let's use JCPenney out of Nebraska. They talked about the general theory, this economic activity theory, as to why they would apply a different ruling in effectively what is a very similar fact pattern. And I think that's interesting because, one, our statutes have no reflection of that economic theory. And second of all, this court in the May case itself expressly rejected that argument of economic theory and cited a couple of other cases at which the court said, we construe the law as it's written. And the economic theory, which was advocated by the director and is frequently advocated by the director, is not part of Missouri law. And we're not going to add it to Missouri law. Not to mention 136.300 says you should strictly construe the statute against it. And I think for that reason, first of all, you end up with a Nebraska case that really doesn't, it addresses a whole different theory that we've never adopted in the state of Missouri. And it would become, I think to many people, a very unexpected decision to find out that we are now going to have an economic theory test. The Arizona case, which is service merchandise, that's a case where the court in Arizona doesn't have a 136.300, a strict construction language, and took the word use and expanded it as broadly as they possibly could. And I think that was their intent. Their intent was to create a very broad reading that use could be kind of anything you wanted it to be as long as you could make an argument that at some point in the chain, inside Arizona or outside Arizona, you had control, you had use. Missouri has never taken that broad of a interpretation. This court certainly has not. And our statutory scheme and this court's decisions past say you don't construe broadly, you construe strictly. Again, I'd urge affirmance of the administrative hearing decisions. Thank you very much.
Four points. From this court in Fall Creek, the use tax eliminates the incentive to purchase from out-of-state merchants in order to escape local sales taxes, thereby keeping in-state merchants competitive with sellers in other states. This court has recognized the economic theory that justifies the use tax. Second, when I send something in the post through the post office and it doesn't get delivered to the address I specified, they send it back. That is, I have retained ownership and control over that item. Third, it may be that Southwestern Bell had day-to-day control over its, quote, agent in Missouri, but that isn't what the court said in the Southwestern Bell case. That stretches beyond what the case says, and I haven't looked back at the record to see if that's justified. And fourth, there was a reference to there being an unexpected decision. Understand that this is a refund case. This is not an assessment case. Office Depot paid this for years thinking this was the correct, that paying it was the correct thing to do. Only recently did they decide that, oh, maybe not. Maybe we can get our money back.
Mr. Layton, is that correct that fourth class mail, they send catalogs out and that they do get it back?
That depends on their arrangements with the post office. So I don't know the answer to that. I know that when I put something in the mail, if I do it first class mail, I have that right.
Right.
But there may be other forms of mailing, but we don't know in this instance.
Based
catalogs
on this record. Come. I mean, Christmas, I can't even get into my mailbox. I mean,
there was one day at Christmas, nothing was in our mailbox, and we were shocked. I don't know the answer to that, and the record here does not tell us in what form it was sent. That's not in the stipulation. It's not in the legal file, so it's not in the proof presented by Office Depot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.